This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Lynn Neary in Washington. Neil Conan is out today. In the 70s, it was POW/MIA bracelets. In the 80s, massive charity concerts and CDs. In the 90s, there were red AIDS ribbons. Now we're back to bracelets. On wrists around the country, plastic bracelets heralding a rainbow of causes, most famously cyclist Lance Armstrong's Cancer Awareness Foundation. In this dual season of charity and commercialism, we look into the intersection of the two, the way talismans of philanthropy sometimes become fashion symbols. Today on Talk of the Nation, the marketing of charity, the techniques nonprofits use to court the public, why some symbols take off, and what it means for groups when they do. Later in this hour, we'll talk with the mortal man behind the latest team of superhumans, the Incredibles, but now we want to hear from you. If you've bought into some form of pop charity, the bumper sticker, the bracelet, the CD, did it increase your involvement in the cause? And if you're on the nonprofit side of things, have you ever tried to start an awareness campaign that didn't take off? What happened? Join the conversation. Our number here in Washington, 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK, and our email address, TOTN@npr.org. First, to learn more about why young people especially find the charity bracelet so appealing, we've put a call out to the experts. On the phone now from Pilgrim School in Los Angeles, California, are eighth graders Philema Yemeni and Eric Padilla. I think we have one of them on the phone right now. Philema?
Yeah.
Hi, Philema.
Hi.
Are you both on the line there?
Yes.
Oh, great. Oh, good. All right. Well, let me just start out by asking you, Philema, tell me which bracelets you have, first of all.
I have the Lance Armstrong bracelet, the Live Strong bracelet, and I have the Believe bracelet.
And what color is that one?
Well, the Live Strong bracelet is yellow.
And the Believe?
The Believe is pink.
And Eric, what about you?
I have a Live Strong band, too, and I also have a Believe bracelet.
Now, is this really big at your school? Is it very popular among kids your age?
Yes.
Yeah.
Why is it so popular, Eric?
Because it's a fashion statement, and also people want to help research for cancer.
Uh-huh. And is it more a fashion statement, Philema, or that you want to help people out? Which is it?
Well, in our school, it's more of a fashion statement, but there are a few people who believe, well, I think all of us would like to find a cure for cancer. So it's a fashion statement more than to help.
When did these start getting so popular? Do you remember when you started seeing them on kids?
Yeah, in our school, it was like in September, late September, early October time.
And the Lance Armstrong bracelet was the first one?
Yeah.
Okay, so as a fashion statement, what is it that people like about these bracelets?
Well, I think that since everybody has it, the normal person would say, oh, I have to have it, and like they feel like they don't feel right without having it.
Right. Eric, what about the causes? Let me tell you, let me find out, are kids getting, are they at all getting involved in the causes through these bracelets, do you think?
I think most of them are. And I think it's really special that people are buying bracelets to help research in cancer.
Which, is that the most popular cause and the most popular bracelet, the cancer bracelet?
Yeah, most people buy the Live Strong bracelet rather than the Believe bracelet.
And tell me again what the Believe bracelet represents.
Breast cancer.
The Believe bracelet is for breast cancer. So, but in both cases, these are not controversial causes. I mean, do you think that if they represented somewhat more controversial causes, it might be somewhat different?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah? In what way? What? Why would it be different? That it just wouldn't be a fashion statement anymore? People might be concerned about wearing it if they might be on the outs or something?
Well, yes. If it was like a gang bracelet, I don't think a lot of people would wear it.
Do you think people are going to get tired of them soon? How long do you think this is going to last, Philema?
I think it's going to last for a pretty long time.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah?
At least to the end of the school year, right?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Thanks to both of you for joining us today.
You're welcome.
You're welcome.
That was Eric Padilla and Philema Yemeni, and we talked to them from their school, the Pilgrim School. That's a private school in Los Angeles, California. With us now from his home in Northern Virginia is Alan Andreessen. He's the executive director of the Social Marketing Institute at Georgetown University. Thanks for being with us.
Good afternoon, Lynn.
Well, we've just heard from some young people about why they like the bracelets. And I have to say, I had the impression that it was for them, even though they talked about the causes, the fashion statement is a pretty strong part of why they like those bracelets.
Well, that's certainly true for kids of that age. You know, being at the cutting edge of fashion is certainly very important. And if you have the added benefit that you're helping out a cause that's important, and you certainly hear other people talking about the need to support these causes, gives you an extra benefit.
How does something like this bracelet phenomenon come about?
Well, I think charities in general are always looking for ways in which they can both deliver benefits to people that they're trying to get some money from or get them to volunteer and so on. And the tricky part is to move beyond sort of altruism, just urging people to do it because it's the right thing to do and decent people do that. And the bracelets, I think, are a very clever phenomenon because they really do several things at once. One is they get people a daily reminder of what good people they are. You know, I'm not just talking about teens now. I'm talking about most of us. Secondly, and you had a sense of that from the kids you were talking to, it helps identify you as a member of the clan, if you will, to others with the same bracelet, and you're sort of all doing this together, and that's another great feeling, and it's particularly important for teens, as again you heard. I think the Lance Armstrong one is particularly successful because it gives you a third benefit, I think, of identifying with the, you know, sort of a real Superman in just lots of ways.
Yeah, to what degree does celebrity play a role in the popularity of these kinds of things? I mean, I'm thinking with, for instance, with the AIDS ribbon, that when a lot of celebrities started wearing them, maybe that took off. I mean, is there a direct link between association with a celebrity and the popularity of these things?
Oh, sure. Sure. I think, you know, probably for younger audiences, maybe more so than older audiences, where celebrity worship or celebrity mimicking is, you know, makes you feel more sophisticated, more plugged in, more avant-garde, and so on. I think that's probably more important. I think for older people, it's more the sort of clannish notion that I described earlier, the idea that, you know, you and I are supporting, you know, fighting the AIDS epidemic, and see, I have a badge, and I notice you have a badge too.
Yeah, I have an email here. Let me read this to you. A couple of nights ago, there was a story on the news about black bracelets that are being sold at high schools in St. Louis, along with a pledge sheet to be signed by students to remind them to behave safely. I can imagine a child looking down at this black bracelet on his or her wrist and choosing not to get in a car with the driver who's been drinking or not driving too fast. The proceeds from the sales going to the charity may not make a big difference, but it may actually save lives. That's from Sherry in St. Louis. What's your reaction to that? Again, this is, you mentioned this before, that these bracelets become a reminder of something.
Yeah, indeed. And you know, with a lot of social marketing campaigns have tried to find ways to sort of get messages across in what people call glibly apertures, that is sort of the moment at which people might be ready to hear them. And carrying around on your person, you know, a real symbol of a message, i.e., you know, don't go with somebody who seems to smell of alcohol or otherwise looks scary, is a marvelous way to achieve social change, not just to raise money.
All right, let's take a call now. And if you'd like to join our discussion about Chic Charity or Charity Chic, the number is 1-800-989-8255. Let's go to Julie, and she's in Woodside, California. Hi, Julie.
Hi, good morning.
Hi. Go ahead.
I'm calling from Until There's a Cure Foundation. We are an HIV and AIDS nonprofit. We've been around for about 11 years now, and we've been selling our trademark bracelet. So far to date, we've sold just over 600,000 bracelets. Our proceeds benefit care services, prevention, education, and we were the founding donor of the International AIDS Vaccine Initiative.
What color is your bracelet, Julie?
Our original cuff style bracelet comes in 6 different metals: copper, silver plate, gold plate, sterling silver with an 18-karat gold ribbon, and 14-karat gold.
So is this an effective fundraising tool for an organization like yours?
Absolutely.
And is it lasting? I mean, you said you've been doing it for 11 years, so it sounds like it's not just a flash in the pan, just a
that
momentary trend.
We have been around for 11 years with our cuff-style bracelet, and just recently we introduced our jelly-style bracelet, which is available actually in 11 different colors.
Are you concerned that maybe the bracelet is becoming almost overused as a symbol? Once this Lance Armstrong bracelet, cancer awareness bracelet, became so popular, now we're just seeing a flurry of them. I mean, does that become difficult for you if you're trying to sell your own bracelets for charity?
No, I do feel that is, you know, a concern. However, if there is exposure to a deadly disease in children, our target market, which is 13 to 34-year-old young adults, if they're going out there and they're purchasing a bracelet and they're aware of the impact of, you know, their risky behaviors, they might think twice about that. So I think that the good kind of outweighs the bad.
All right. Thanks so much for calling us, Julie.
Absolutely.
All right. Let's go now to Tony, and he's calling from Idaho. Hi, Tony.
Hi, Lynn. I was just calling because my daughter, I just wanted to, I guess, reiterate something that your guest said. I just joined the program a little late, so I didn't catch his name. But my daughter is wearing a bracelet that simply says, "I did not vote for Bush," and she got it online as a website, I guess, for it. And it's this idea that beyond the fundraising, although she says that money from this bracelet is going to progressive causes, but beyond the fundraising component is simply that the bracelet itself is the message. And again, that it's sort of this whole movement-based culture, and I guess your speaker was talking about this idea of personal identification. You know, we had a president who announced after an incredibly close election that he had a mandate and political capital. And my daughter's like, well, if we all wear these, then it'll show that they don't have this mandate. They don't have this capital. So I just thought I would bring that up.
All right. Thanks so much for your call, Tony.
Okay.
So the bracelets become political statements in some ways. Would you say that's true even when they are attached to specific causes, Alan Andreessen?
Yeah, I think they become a political statement in the sense that we all like to feel part of groups, and often groups have causes, and some of those causes involve elections and representatives, but other kinds of causes involve getting people to vote more money for AIDS vaccine research or transfer more money to the public health service or any number of other things. And the sense of empowerment that groups can get by seeing others supporting these particular movements towards some kind of social change is probably a good way to make the groups more powerful, as well as give lots of personal gratification to people who are often working at kind of no wages and under a lot of pressure and sometimes political opposition to trying to get their cause or their legislation passed or the budget in their favor.
How long do you expect a trend like this to last?
Well, I think it'll last for a while, in part because it still represents this kind of badge, and we all know of all sorts of badges that we wear to either give us access to some place or to say we're members of an organization. Certainly in Washington, we're forever seeing folks with dangling identity cards around their neck that say they're part of the government workforce. I think all of those kinds of things help build group solidarity in some ways, and sometimes that's useful for security purposes, but also it's very useful for helping bond the group together to make them more powerful. And I think to the extent that bracelets can do that and at the same time be a fashion statement.
Thanks so much for joining us today. Alan Andreessen is the executive director of the Social Marketing Institute at Georgetown University. We'll continue our discussion when we return. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Lynn Neary in Washington. We're talking about the power of pop culture to make good causes into hot trends. Ribbons and bracelets can raise a lot of cash in the short term, but do they have a longer impact? And does a cause lose some of its power when it becomes a fad? You're invited to join the discussion. If you work in the nonprofit sector, do you have to think about marketing your organization? Have you discovered techniques that didn't work? Give us a call at 800-989-TALK, and our email address is TOTN@npr.org. With us now is Brooks Kenny, a principal with the consulting firm Promoting Public Causes. She joins us from their offices in Bethesda, Maryland. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Lynn.
Maybe you can give us a little history. How did these sorts of public campaigns for good causes get started?
Yeah, it's actually really interesting to look at the history of nonprofits and companies coming together more aggressively to promote philanthropy. And it actually started back in the 80s with American Express, which is a company that actually coined the phrase that is now oftentimes used called cause marketing, where nonprofits and companies come together to advance one another's business and organizational objectives. And that particular campaign was actually the restoration project for the Statue of Liberty. So when consumers use their American Express card, a portion went back to restore the statue, and it was hugely successful, and they since coined that phrase, and it's really been a growing trend in both the private and the nonprofit sector.
So are these things always linked to some kind of corporate sponsorship, or are they sometimes grassroots sort of rise up out of a grassroots organization? Or,
well, anytime a nonprofit organization is building their brand and trying to get the word out to their key audiences, they oftentimes will do that in and of themselves with through volunteers, through public awareness campaigns. But increasingly, nonprofits are seeking the support of corporations, and likewise, companies are seeking the support and branding opportunity that a nonprofit affords them to help them advance some of their objectives.
So, for instance, when we first started seeing the red ribbons appearing, I guess that was in the 90s, that wasn't just accidental that all of a sudden we started seeing them appearing and in some very high-profile places and worn by many celebrities.
Absolutely. When you look at the nonprofit sector as a whole and when you think about branding, nonprofits have to increasingly become savvy. And as we all know, there's lots of clutter out there. There's lots of competition. There are lots of things that motivate a nonprofit organization to look at themselves and say, we need to stand out among the crowd, and we need to develop campaigns that are going to resonate with our audiences. And oftentimes, having the marketing power of a company and a celebrity can help them to do that.
So we're into a whole new world of charity now. It's a very different kind of approach to getting people to give money at this point. It's very competitive, it seems to be what you're saying.
It is. I have the good fortune in our firm to train and educate nonprofit organizations in the areas of communications. And one of the things that we always tell them is nonprofit organizations no longer need to be afraid of the word brand. They no longer need to not use words like marketing and even use words like customers. They need to really look at themselves similarly to the way the private sector does in order to develop that relationship with their target audience. And unfortunately, unlike the resources that are available in the private sector, nonprofit organizations are often faced with limited funds and resources. Oftentimes, they may only have a development director as opposed to a development director and a communications and a branding and marketing person or resource internally in their organization.
Have you found, though, that there's some reluctance or hesitation on the part of nonprofits to use the word branding, to talk about marketing in this kind of way?
Absolutely. There has been over the years, although I'm starting to see in our trainings that shift. We oftentimes, to get people thinking, put bad words at the top of our slide and list all of those things that are traditionally thought of as being done in the private sector.
What are the bad words besides branding?
Branding, marketing, customer outreach, increasing revenue, these types of things that sometimes nonprofit organizations, because they are so mission-driven, as they should be, because our society is better for the work that they do need to sometimes put that more aggressive hat on and try to figure out how can they reach their target audience in a way that's very effective and in a way that perhaps was more aggressive than they had thought of in the past. We often tell them, too, they need not be afraid of having a compelling brochure or marketing piece that can help get their message out. Used to be nonprofits didn't want to put resources toward developing a nice brochure or a compelling piece of collateral, and if it's thought through the right way, it can actually be really valuable to them.
We're talking about the intersection of philanthropy and fashion trends. If you'd like to join our discussion, the number is 800-989-8255. Let's take a call now from Sarah, and she's in Kansas City, Missouri. Hi, Sarah.
Hello.
Go ahead.
I actually am the kind of person who turns into a cynic as soon as anything becomes a fad. And I kind of feel like one of your previous callers had made the comment about how the reminders are there, that when kids see these bracelets when they're wearing them, that they have the reminder of why they have it on. It might save lives. It might, you know, it's that altruistic, you know, intention. And, you know, I'm kind of curious, well, what happens when the kids grow out of that? What happens when the fad ends and nobody really understood why it was there in the first place? Nobody knows, you know, what kind of cancer research is available, mm-hmm. what they can do beyond just purchasing the fad.
That's an interesting question. Can you take that on for us, Brooks?
Yeah, sure. I think it is an interesting question, and I think the reality when any of these types of campaigns are implemented in the marketplace, consumers, as they should be, are going to have an air of critique to their evaluation of those programs. And I think it's really important that the nonprofit organization, as well as the company, be really transparent. It's one of the most important lessons as companies and nonprofits continue to partner together. All organizations need to be very upfront with where the money is going, how much of the money is being given back to the cause, explaining how the fad or the trinket or whatever it might be is linked to that cause. And you'll see also, I think, that many programs do go beyond just a particular token, but actually provide some additional education and other things on the back end as well. And so I agree that a fad without explanation sometimes can be a risk in the marketplace, but
sure.
I think it's important that organizations are really upfront with consumers, because increasingly consumers like you are demanding it.
All right,
right.
Thanks so much for your call, Sarah.
Thank you very much.
All right, we're going to take another call now. We're going to go to, we'll go to Alan in Philadelphia. Hi, Alan.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. My comments about this bracelet is I first became aware of it recently. My former university, the University of Michigan, started selling blue bracelets, I guess the jelly bracelets, for the Children's Hospital as a fundraiser. And their feeling was, if you get 100,000 fans at a football game to buy these, that's a quick influx of quick cash to $300,000 a week. Plus, we have a large alumni class. So I think my take on it is it's a great way for a mass audience of people to participate with something rather than just making a fashion statement. And the fact that the bracelet is there is a great adjunct to that, because it says, I participated and I can be part of this.
All right. Thanks so much for your call, Alan.
Yeah, if I could jump in on that, I think that one of the things that's really, really critical about why this has been successful is the simplicity of it and the fact that everyone can participate and become a part of something larger than themselves.
All right, we'd like to get somebody else involved in this discussion now. We're going to be joined by Gene Temple. He's the executive director of the Center on Philanthropy at Indiana University, and he comes to us from the studios of member station WFYI in Indianapolis, Indiana. Thanks for being with us.
You're very welcome.
So the things that we've been talking about, these bracelets, the ribbons, they don't really cost a lot. Do they have other benefits beyond using them as fundraisers, would you say?
Well, I think the primary benefit is it raises awareness of a cause. It gets a lot of people directly engaged with a cause like the Lance Armstrong Foundation or the Coleman Foundation for Breast Cancer Research. In the end, if it hadn't been for Nike, for example, underwriting the production costs of these bracelets and getting them into circulation across the country, the Lance Armstrong Foundation could not have afforded, for example, from a fundraising standpoint, to produce these bracelets and sell them for a dollar a piece. I mean, the transactional cost would consume most of the money that came in, so there wouldn't be much for philanthropy. But the fact that these bracelets are out there have done a great job in terms of raising awareness of a cause, perhaps educating people about the importance of being conscious of cancer, for example. That's been the primary benefit so far.
You know, I was struck when we were talking to the kids earlier that when they talked about the bracelets, they said, well, I have a pink bracelet and I have a yellow bracelet. And I had to ask them, well, what's the cause associated with that? Their first instinct was not to say what the cause was, but the color of their bracelet. And I wonder if the bracelets are all just merging into one big fashion statement as opposed to that awareness that you're talking about. How aware are they really?
Well, you know, that remains to be seen. Certainly there's the possibility that they're simply a fashion statement and young people do this just simply to belong. But I have to believe that especially the yellow bracelets have done some penetration to make people aware of Lance Armstrong's battle with cancer and that kind of thing. I know my own son has a number of these bracelets. He's a 20-year-old. He became very excited about the possibility of these bracelets, and he actually contacted the Lance Armstrong Foundation for help in organizing a bicycle race to raise money for the Lance Armstrong Foundation. So, I mean, I think he knows and has some awareness of what's behind that bracelet, but I think that's the key thing, is that the organizations like this, when they see something like this happening, they can certainly do much more to build on the awareness that's been created, and perhaps even to engage these people in a way that they haven't been engaged simply by the purchase of that bracelet, and then to do greater philanthropy on the back side of this. That I think without doing something to engage these people and to do fundraising beyond that, that it will simply be a fad. There'll be some awareness, that can be tested at whatever level, but there won't be much ongoing philanthropy beyond that if the organizations don't do something to capture the interest and excitement that happens.
Brooks Kenny, from your perspective, is there a point when there are so many copycats out there that the market's oversaturated, so to speak, and not as effective? These tools are not as effective?
Well, I always think that that's a risk. However, when we look at building brand awareness and we look at increasing the momentum for a particular cause, if you look at the history of breast cancer, and if you look at how many different companies are engaged and tied into that particular cause, it's really quite phenomenal when you think about it used to be a lot of times nonprofit organizations were perhaps being the ones out there chasing the companies for funding and for promotion. And now there are companies that are coming to different breast cancer organizations to link with them. So I do think that it is a risk, but I think it's like any other marketing program. There needs to be clear messages and clear objectives. And the one that's mostly tied to the brand is going to be the one that shows itself ahead of the pack.
Brooks Kenny is with the consulting firm Promoting Public Causes, and you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. We're going to take a call now from Jeff, and I believe he's calling from Iowa. Hi, Jeff.
I am. Thank you very much for taking the time to take my call today.
Go ahead.
I have cringed through this whole segment today. I am the director of a small nonprofit. We are all volunteers, from me at the bottom through our 120 volunteers at the top, and we've made a solemn promise when we started our outreach that we would never send out fundraising letters. We would never do anything that would make people feel like they needed to support us. And we have done our best work by just doing what we're called to do and allowing those people who share the same passions that we have to support our work.
How do you get money? How do you raise funds?
Well, you know, it comes in from those people who think what we're doing is good work. And we...
But how do you make them aware of who you are and what you're doing?
Just by our being in the community. I'm purposely not telling you... I will tell you that we work with the deaf community. But we have always felt that we go into the community, we do what we do, people come to us and say, hey, you know, I think this is great. Can I help? And our budget is small, and we're never very wealthy. But I think all of us start getting whacked this time of the year with letters from people who are, I'm sure, wonderful causes going, you know, if we don't get another $17,000 and if we don't get more of this. And I think it really, I find nowadays as I look, and I might suggest to everybody a great resource is GuideStar.org as a place to go and look at what nonprofits are about and where their money goes, because you will find nowadays that more and more of the money that was that people have sent to them to do whatever the particular mission they have is going into fundraising.
All right, I'm going to ask, thanks so much for calling us, Jeff, and let me just see if I can get one of our guests, perhaps Gene Temple, maybe could respond to that.
Yeah, I would really like to comment on that caller's remarks. First of all, half the nonprofits in the country do, in fact, have no paid staff, so he should not feel alone in that regard. Second, it is very important when you do research about why people give. People give because they're aware of and engaged in a cause. So I think that although I think that there are a lot of nonprofits organizations out there that understand communications and marketing and all those things that Brooke says are dirty words, I think they understand them well and do them very well. In fact, most of the organizations we work understand that very well. They know how to make a case for support. They know how to make an appeal and use different strategies for doing that. I encourage our caller to look at some of those possibilities. And I would say that most organizations that know how to make a case for support make that case for support based on the strengths, interpret it in terms of what they do in terms of good for the community, the clients they serve, and how that impacts the community. That's how you have an opportunity to ask for support.
It's interesting, though, that he raises this issue, and maybe that nonprofits, just a lot of people in that area just feel totally uncomfortable when the whole question of money comes up.
Well, that certainly is a problem. For some people, it is an issue of they feel like they're begging or they feel like they're being subservient when they ask for money. And we, of course, try to teach people how to get past that by making the case for support. But there's one important thing we need to take note of here before we let it go too far. And
very
that
briefly,
is that,
because we're going to have to end soon.
There is a problem with the data on GuideStar. You go to GuideStar and look up the 990s, you get bad data. There are some organizations will tell you they have zero fundraising costs. In fact, we just finished a study, and 37% of the organizations with fundraising income of $50,000 or more on GuideStar documents say they have zero fundraising costs. It cannot be. So we know there's inaccurate information there, and that's not how you make your judgment about whether a nonprofit organization is worthy of support.
All right, we're going to have to end right there. Thanks so much for joining us. Brooks Kenny, who joined us earlier, is a principal with the consulting firm Promoting Public Causes, and Gene Temple joined us from the studios of member station WFYI in Indianapolis. He's executive director of the Center on Philanthropy at Indiana University. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News.